All right, I think we're on. Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. I am your host, Chad Sherwood, with an all-star panel here tonight. We've got up top here David Griggs and Joby Fortson. A picture, at least, of John Tytel down center, down right below me here. I think we're having little video issues. And on his sides, we've got Mike Cha and Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org back with us. And we are recording this here on the evening of Thursday, August 13th. And there's been not much going on in the college sports world this week. So I think we have a real quick show tonight. Am I right, David?
Yeah, not a whole lot going on, at least not as far as games going. A lot of off the field stuff.
Yeah. For those of you who have been living in a box, obviously, fall sports are almost completely dead. Pretty much every conference at this point has canceled their fall sports season, with the exception of most notably the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC, who are still at the moment planning to play football.
And the
Big
American.
And Sunbelt.
And the Sunbelt, yeah. Meanwhile, the Mid-American, the Mountain West, and most notably the Big 10 and the Pac-12 have already canceled their fall sports. Pac-12
yes.
taking it the furthest step of anybody other than the Ivy League and saying no sports at all this calendar year, which would include the start of the basketball season. Obviously, we're a basketball website, yeah. So that we're already losing portions of non-conference play. So we've got a lot to talk about tonight.
Yeah, Division III also canceled. Division II also canceled. Fall championships canceled.
I believe the NAIA is gone as well. Yeah,
is it? Okay, I didn't know that.
I think FCS football is all but dead, too. There's nobody.
There's no championship. A few schools might try and play.
A few schools that have bye games against ACC, SEC type of schools may play a single football game in the fall still to get that payday. But
defense, man.
We've got a lot to actually get to here, though. But, you know, one of the things that's been discussed over the past month as well, in addition to the pandemic and everything that's going on and the canceling of these games, is a movement that basically started out of the Pac-12 at first with the We Are United campaign there, a group of players, I think there's almost 500 players total that got together eventually signed off on this. And they sent a letter to the Pac-12 and the schools, an open letter, it's available for the public as well, demanding certain health and safety protocols, demanding that various sports be not canceled. There was talk about canceling various sports. Demanding
it's
an
old
end
as in discontinued.
Discontinued, yes, yes, yes. Demanding an end to racial injustice in college sports and demanding certain economic freedom and equity, including, let me just read off a couple of these. They want distribution of 50% of each sport's total conference revenue among the athletes, 6-year athletic scholarships for undergraduate and graduate degree completion, elimination of policies and practices restricting or deterring freedom of speech, ability to participate in charitable work, freedom to participate in campus activities outside of mandatory athletic participation, ability to transfer one time without punishment and multiple times in case of abuse or serious negligence, ability to complete their eligibility after participating in a pro draft, and certain due process rights, which included the right to be represented by legal counsel. And any discussions about this letter, that part has already been nixed by Larry Scott. But Rocco, let me bring you in here to start, because you are a Pac-12 guy out there on the West Coast. This was a hell of a list of demands that I think has been a long time coming, but I want to start with your thoughts on it.
Agreed. Yeah, it has been a long time coming. And I think, you know, if it wasn't for the pandemic, maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. I think a lot of changes are happening around us, whether it be sports or more important issues than that. And the players are more organized, they're more educated, and they realize in the last 5+ years, as we all have, the money in college sports has just ballooned. Like, you know, you look at what schools and athletic departments were bringing in even as recently as 2013 compared to today, and it's like 5x now, right? So the more money that's coming into the programs, the more awareness and the more, wait a second, you're going to get from the players that are out there performing and ultimately generating the excitement, whether it be on television or for the local fans. So, you know, I think with just a combination of all those factors, plus, you know, of course, Northwestern tried to unionize in 2014, got shut down. There's just a tremendous amount of education. You guys actually had Andy Schwartz on last year, an economist. All of this information is very much more easily available. A lot of very intelligent, educated lawyers on the subject. And there's a lot of smart football players out there going to prestigious universities here in the Pac-12 and across the country. So it's almost inevitable that we were going to get here. And it came faster than I think everybody was ready for based on the climate we're in. But it's here now. And I think that's why we're springing into some subjects a lot faster than I think the presidents, the athletic directors, and the commissioners were ready to have.
Yeah, and I got to say, Tytel, let me ask you this here. You know, these schools are making a lot of money on basketball, I mean, more to greater extent on football. These players are being asked not only to play without receiving any share of the income, without being able to benefit from their name, image, and likeness, without receiving, in some cases, a guarantee of a scholarship even, in some cases, certain medical coverage even. They're being asked to do all of that. They're being asked now with the pandemic to potentially risk their lives by playing, or at the very least, to be able to be to follow a very, very strict set of rules, to be in a quasi bubble with, hey, you've got to go here, you've got to be here, you got to eat at this time, you got to sleep at this time, you got to study at this time. And they received nothing for it while they're playing this game that is making tons of money for the schools. I thought we abolished slavery in this country, but you know, maybe you could fill me in on that.
Wow. Slavery, eh?
Indentured servitude. Come
on. Indentured servitude. All right.
So let me address each of the 10 questions you went. No, I'm kidding. So a couple things. As far as the medical, I certainly don't want any human being, even if it's my favorite college player, to put his life at risk just to play a game. I hope we all agree that that seems ridiculous. As far as the money, there's so many different aspects. I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy who believes that the value of your services is that you get a free college education and a free place to live and this and that. I was talking to an NBA agent today. I'm going to hopefully post the interview either tomorrow or sometime in the days ahead. And he's like, you know, John, if you're – he thinks it depends on the sport. He's like, you know, if you have a lacrosse player or a swimmer, like, not only are they not bringing in any revenue to the school, but they're literally, like, costing the school some money, which is okay. But a basketball player is literally helping bring in, like, millions of dollars potentially to a Division I university, and therefore the agent thinks that they should get compensated. Again, I'm old-fashioned, and I'm probably in the minority these days, and – I'm not going to like boycott the sport, but I'm a firm believer that they shouldn't get paid because it seems to me like they have so many other things at their disposal. That being said, I don't want them to get hurt or risk their life either.
Well, Tytel, let me respond to that though. Well, let's put aside the idea of taking a share of the revenue. How about being able to profit from their own name, image, and likeness? Why can't they go out and get their name on a Wheaties box and get money for posing to be on the Wheaties box?
I think if they want to forfeit their college eligibility as an amateur athlete, they should be completely allowed to get money for any name, image, likeness they can. But I thought part of the deal of getting the college education and scholarship and books and housing and everything is that you agree to be an amateur athlete. And there are very strict rules because it's a slippery slope. And if you can do this, then maybe you should be allowed to get a college job or a summer job or a work study or whatever. If somebody's willing to pay, perhaps the marketplace will dictate and stuff. I just think it's a very slippery slope myself.
David, I'll start with you, and then Joby, I want to go to you after that. But your response to Tytel.
Well, I mean, I think the players should get more than what they do. And I kind of want to dispel one of the arguments against giving it to the players is, well, they don't need it. Like, they get all this stuff. And then one of the arguments for giving it to them is – they're going to bed hungry. They don't have anything. Being a college athlete in a lot of ways, as it is now, is still a pretty sweet gig. But to me, that doesn't mean they don't deserve more than what they get. I think that they do. I don't buy for a second that you're any less of a student or you know, they say, well, they're there to get an education. Well, so are student workers. So are doctoral students. So are RAs. So are lots of people that, that make money from the school that are paid in some way, shape, or form. I got, when I went to grad school, I went for free and I got paid on top of that. And I wasn't generating any revenue or doing anything really for the school whatsoever. A lot of people go to school for free as undergrads that aren't athletes. The vast majority of people that get full scholarships or tuition remission probably aren't athletes. So I don't understand why it just seems like it's so out of balance now, to where all of the revenue that's generated and all that they bring in, and more so the way, yeah, the way that it is structured. You know, like, I mean, this is what they're, in my opinion, like, are they providing, basically, like, it checks all the boxes for me as being an employee. Like, they're providing a service, they're providing it to someone that's giving them direction, and the person that's directing them is benefiting from it. I mean, regardless, and this is especially for the revenue sports, but it's all of them. I just don't see how this is not, if you've never been around Division I athletics, it is not a rec league. It's not high school athletics. It is the most important thing that they're doing at that school. And they might say it's to get an education, but it is not. Like, your athletics comes first.
Well, first of all, I just want to note that Brian Black has joined us down there.
Below Brian, all right,
We'll get to you in a few moments here. Dave, just follow what you just said. And let me turn over to Joby now here, because, Joby, I want to throw one other thing out here. There was just this morning, I believe it was sponsored by Cory Booker, a bill that was produced in the Senate, which would be basically a college athlete's bill of rights, which includes a proposal to allow college players to earn money beyond just name, image, and likeness. Allow them to go into group licensing agreements for apparel, video games. There's also basically allow for free transferring between programs, I think almost on an unlimited basis. Lifetime scholarships that allow them to finish their scholarship at any point in time, not even just while they're playing. Several other financial things there. Your thoughts on that here? Because yeah, this is another state. This could become law if this.
It's
goes.
Very interesting. It's not going to become this in this particular version. Will not become law. Let's get realistic, unless the filibuster is removed, and it could be. It could be, yeah. But mm-hmm. for the near future, and they're not going to remove the filibuster for this. that won't. There's other bigger things in our country that need to happen. But there's a lot of interesting ideas. You know, I find myself personally, and Booker goes probably further than I would on a lot of the issues, the organization, the labor organization hints that are in there, and the trial lawyer present gifts that are kind of packaged in there on liability are kind of going to be no non-starters in my opinion. But the general concepts of what Booker is put forth, I have some warmth to. I find myself personally between, in the worlds between where Tytel is and where David is. I don't believe in all out pay, because I do think there is value. I get exactly what John's saying. There is value in the scholarship. If you don't think, and not just the scholarship, but the admittance to the school, if you don't think so, then why is Lori Loughlin going to jail or voided jail? I mean, she's paid $500,000 just to get her kid in. And that is not unusual, because you ask any quote unquote normal, you know, non-athletic person to try, you know, who is a high school senior with college ambitions, it's one of the most nerve-wracking times of their and their kids' life. So that is a big piece of value that gets put aside that I get really sick of. However, and then on top of it, however, when someone is profiting off your name, image, and likeness, it's like they're directly using it. It's the O'Bannon watching himself on a computer video. I have a lot of sympathy for that. Now, How do you regulate it? There are a lot of issues. Booker's is way too loose. Is Rubio's too tight? That's another bill that's out there that's up for folks to debate. I think there needs to be some oversight, but I don't want some oversight that it kills it. And so where is that line drawn? But I am in the middle that if there is something happening that is profiting off you, there should be, you should be able to get some form of compensation for this. The last point I'll say is, though, it also is more market friendly than just a blank stipend. Because I'm sorry, Zion Williamson getting a Nike contract after the shoe blowing up episode, you know, which you know would happen, it makes a lot of sense. But the third string point guard for Duke who gets no time and, yeah, hey, he contributes in practice and all that. And so you're getting, you're getting your cost of attendance and your free Duke education at top 10 university in the country. So that's pretty darn good. Costs $75,000 a year in value. He shouldn't be getting these massive slices of millions of dollars because no one's watching TV for him. No one's paying money for him. He's getting his fair compensation as part of the university, system. Name, image, and likeness puts that market power to, hey, I'm watching for Zion Williamson. Okay, or RJ Barrett to use his teammate. Awesome. Let Zion Williamson profit, but don't just blanket profit everybody who isn't necessarily there, because there isn't endless money to go around at most universities, and you're basically going to cut a zillion predominantly men's sports because of Title IX, but you're going to cut a lot of women's sports too. And long-winded, but I'm in the middle between the two.
But Joby, the whole idea with the name, image, likeness is we're getting the money from the sponsor. It's not going to be university money we're paying to.
Right. And that's, I understand that will take some, you're getting actually, I think it would open up sponsorship abilities that of new money, of new investment, as well as existing university uniforms. But we got to be careful because, not everything, people are watching Duke basketball for the most part now, not because of Zion Williamson being there in the past. They don't care who's there. It's really Kay, and Kay gets very well compensated, but people are watching the university first and foremost, but there are instances where players themselves jump out and create that buzz in that element. Zion's the obvious. Yeah, I point out Zion.
John Morant. And when people are watching Murray State just for him.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And John Morant could, but Murray State's not gaining a ton in revenue, I dare say, because of the OVC contract. So, But John Morant could actually profit off that capability and those jersey sales or whatever we decide fits the bill.
Let me explain kind of where I am with this, Joe, because I don't agree with the 50%. I don't think it should be that much, but there is something that kind of sticks in my craw about how a lot of the money that's ballooning up into college athletics, it seems like administrators and coaches and presidents, mainly coaches and administrators, are using that as an excuse to give themselves more. Well, we can't give it to the players. That's kind of a sticking point. And another thing is, okay, if they're going to be amateurs and you're not going to pay them, then they shouldn't be treated like employees. That is my issue. Either pay them or stop treating them like employees.
David, I think, like I said, the most important thing is that educational component. I'm all in on not just the 6-year, but the Cory Booker lifetime scholarship idea. I am all in because I'm going to walk the walk and talk the talk.
How about a rule that like
it can't be revoked, because I hate this year to year jump.
Yeah.
Unless the kid does something and goes to jail. There's that normal standard contract clauses.
Okay, how about a rule that says a player in any sport can major in whatever they want and cannot be told they have to change it because it conflicts with when they want to practice?
Boom! Exactly right.
Okay, exactly. If you're not going to,
if you don't, if let's say all the
How about actually enforcing the 20-hour-a-week rule?
Right. I'm all in on
it. You know, nobody wants to do that. And I get that, but nobody wants to pay them either. And where I'm at, Joby, isn't that I think they should be paid just for the sake of being paid. It's like you can't have – if you're going to treat them like employees, pay them. If you're not, then don't – if you're not going to pay them, then don't treat them like employees. Treat them like amateur athletes. It's kind of as simple as that.
And I'm there, David. I'm there. Yeah.
Mike, let me bring you in on this. Get your thoughts on this whole discussion we've had is, you know, is this, you know – I guess the other question I got to ask here is, you know, can the NCAA deal with this? I mean, because we're talking about an organization that moves slow as molasses with everything coming at it. At the same time, we got the pandemic going on.
I say no. I mean, they've had all what they've had 6 months to figure this out, and they obviously they haven't shown that they can figure this out. What have they done to give me faith that they can figure this out? If they've had 6 months. And they haven't figured it out.
Right.
Well, it's 20 years or longer.
Well, I'm referring to the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the motivation to figure it out until they're forced, right?
Right.
Well, and Brian, you're with us as well, I think, down there. Let me just bring you in here on your thoughts. You're a Pac-12 guy as well as Rocco, which started this We Are United movement here. In the midst of the pandemic, and let me kind of throw the same question there is, does something need to change, and is this something that the NCAA can handle?
Over the last like 2 or 3 weeks, it's weird now that all the pro sports have come back. It's like, oh yeah, there's all this stuff with college athletics that has to get sorted out. And with not having sports for so long, and then all of a sudden pro sports comes back, I feel like, unfortunately, a lot of focus for a lot of people has shifted away from what's happening in college athletics right now. And I would hope that people begin to focus on it a little bit more, because this is a big deal. I think it's a lot bigger deal than people are giving it credit for. And it's something that if the situation isn't resolved in the next year, and if the schools end up, especially out west, not playing, and other schools do end up playing, how far behind are we going to fall? And if we fall behind, like also if nobody plays at all, how are people going to evaluate talent? Especially at the professional level. I mean, that's going to become such a nightmare to try to figure out, if you lose spring sports, I don't even want to think about how bad it's going to be for baseball people to try to figure out how their talent situation. But like basketball, if we lose a year of basketball, as well as, we've already lost basically a whole postseason. If we lose another season, an entire season, like, how is the NBA going to evaluate now, especially if high schools aren't going to be playing in the same circumstances? That's my concern, really. I mean, and the shockwaves that it will send throughout all of the landscape, every conference, with the amount of money lost by all of these universities once this ends up being a thing. Like, it's going to be an absolute nuke to everything we have known and loved about college basketball and football. But this is something that is so unprecedented. And my thoughts on it are simply just deep concern for everyone involved, especially the schools out west. I know we're kind of leading this whole student united sort of thing. And I thought for years of what happens if a student union sort of comes up with college athletics. And if it does, would they bring in, other students that wouldn't be on scholarship and stuff like that, and how all that would work? And, the whole concern I have is I think the NCAA needs to figure out and set out a system that they can outline for everybody. And, if only they could step in and do this, and they could form some sort of governing body. Yeah, I'd love to see some big governing body of all of the schools just come together and figure out a way to deal with it as one unit instead of a bunch of conferences at this point. I don't know how else to think of it. I am so concerned.
Well, you know what, Brian, that kind of leads me right into the other point. One of the other points I really want to discuss here is what we've seen the past week here with each conference and conference individually deciding what to do in football. And we've seen here, you know, I think NCAA first about fall sports is we're leaving it up to each sport or we're leaving it up to each division. There is no leadership. Rocco, let me bring you back in here first on this is, you know, is that the biggest problem here is that we have an NCAA organization that maybe it seems completely inept lately and maybe it's time to just blow the whole thing up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that's a novel idea and Brian did an excellent job, I think, identifying the threat, right? Mm-hmm. Like we all know the doomsday scenario. He articulated that very well. I think when push comes to shove, the NCAA, just maybe more gut feeling than anything and just kind of being around the environment. I was at, you know, Pac-12 Media Day last year and, you know, throughout last season, talking to coaches and things. My gut feel is that they've been prepping for this day for quite a while and there's a response in place when it's time. And we've even seen Mark Emmert today come out and reinstill confidence to the fan base, at least the college basketball landscape, that they're going to find a way to do a tournament. So they're going to keep saying the right things. I think the biggest thing I keep coming back to is if push comes to shove with the payment of players and it's outside of NIL, you know, that's where they're getting stuck and wanting to kick the can down the road again and again and again. I think if it comes to just health and safety and figuring out an environment to play and trying to get around the student athlete, you know, they want to continue to call them student athletes, although Mr. Griggs, you did an amazing job explaining why they're athlete students instead of student athletes. I mean, there's just way too much demand. I mean, we've all been around these players and covered them and, you know, it's their life to go out there and work on their game. And, you know, basketball is the 100% of their focus. So, you know, there is going to have to be a compromise. And I think my gut says they're prepared for that. They just don't want to deal with it until they absolutely were on the final mile of the race.
Yeah, and a little bit, if I kind of want to address your question here, Chad. I think that it's a loaded question and problem.
It is, yeah.
For starters, the NCAA is not like most pro sports league, or at least the way I understand most pro sports leagues to be. There's not a commissioner. It's not a top-down organization. Like, the people that sit at the top, Mark Emmert, really isn't in a position to really do much of anything
Is that the prom, David? Is that we need an organization that does have that?
Chad, right. You're a lawyer. You know that because Georgia won the case.
He's my lawyer.
Yeah, well, but you know that it's because of legal. It's been legally determined that the NCAA cannot do it, and now the schools have ceded their individual rights to their conferences because they're your stronger as a negotiation unit.
Right.
But so remember, the NCAA itself will never have that capability. So then it legally, the Supreme Court's already determined that. So what is the next step?
Well,
I dare say Power Five is really the only, with maybe a Big East for Wink for basketball, is, I don't know if I like that rule.
Well, essentially, like, whenever anything changes, or it has to come from within the membership. Like, there's these proposals and these bylaws, and you have these representatives that go over them. And, like, it kind of has to come from within, and it can take years or longer. And it's just – it moves along in a snail's pace. The other thing that is that once you get past the staffers, like, when you look at the Board of Governors, when you look at Mark Emmert, and you look at that level – these are former college presidents. These are not former athletic directors. Mark Emmert never worked in an athletic department. Most of the big brass in the NCAA never has either. They weren't coaches. They weren't administrators. So you have these people. It's the equivalent of the boss's son, the factory owner's son that's put in charge of running the factory that's never actually worked there, has no idea how to make anything. That is largely the NCAA. So I think what you're seeing is a symptom of a problem that has been around for literally at least 30 years. I mean, at least as long as I've been following the sport. These people don't know any.
The Georgia case in, I think, 1979.
Right. Remember when Mark Emmert didn't even know what the how many teams were in the FCS playoffs? Of course he didn't. He's never worked around a football team.
Well, and maybe that's another problem here is we have Mark Emmert in charge of the NCAA.
And I'm not beating up.
Of three divisions and every sport, not just football and basketball, but you've got, I don't know, riflery and, I don't know, ultimate frisbee and curling.
Yeah.
And I don't know whatever sports they
There's
sponsor.
90 of them. There are 90 of them. 90.
But, Tytel, let me ask you, you know, is there a way we could solve this problem? Because, I mean, we've seen mass chaos this week. We saw the Big Ten opt out of football and Nebraska ready to go rogue on their own conference up until today.
I like your analogy of the tail between its legs. Nebraska should feel like.
It certainly has been a wild week in the college football arena. I think that others are going to follow suit. It would seem weird to me that if, like, Clemson wins another national title by going through, like, a couple of random, like, teams from some random conferences and not having to worry about
– beating Alabama and LSU like they have to do anyway, you know.
Yes, but
the relevance of the play like the other Ohio State's low anyway.
In the country, and that's not going to happen. So I think it's not going to work out, but we'll see. Maybe there's a vaccine. Maybe there's a bubble. Who knows? I don't know how it's going to exactly impact college basketball, and I don't think anybody else does either. Like, it's weird that we're going to have – this big Thanksgiving is usually the time of all these amazing tournaments, and that ship seems like it sailed. And who knows what January is going to be like? Who knows if there's going to be May Madness? God forbid. Like, I wish I had better answers, Chad. I honestly don't.
Yeah, Mike, let me ask you, because you're a Michigan guy, and there was a little bit of dispute up there. They didn't go Nebraska rogue on the Big Ten, but I don't think Michigan was very keen on this on them canceling the fall
season.
Yeah,
well, it's Harbaugh in particular. He was saying, oh, we got to play. We're doing all the precautions, blah, blah, blah. But I'd like to say that the Big Ten, Pac-12 postponing football, it's not out of the goodness of their hearts. It's because they realize that, you know, there could be repercussions. Isn't the corona a link to a heart issues, a serious heart issues?
They suspect that it might be.
It might be. And the biggest thing here, you know, just to very
that's the number one reason is because of potential lawsuits. You're talking about something that's not just affecting this year and next year, but into decades. You're talking about health, serious health issues.
And there's
lawsuits left and right.
There's people that say there aren't these health issues. People that say there are. My whole point is maybe they're right. Maybe their health issues aren't nearly as bad as they could. As some people are saying they are, but we just don't know yet. And right. You got to do the same thing, I think, and put these sports off. And I know we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, but Joe, you got other thoughts on this? I think we cut you off a little bit earlier.
Oh no,
I like cutting Joby off.
Well, hey, I know most of you guys are. Yeah, Brian's Pac-12. Chad and Mike are Big Ten oriented. Yeah. I'm from ACC country, so I have a different point of view. I am not afraid. Yeah, I am not afraid though of what Clemson is going to do. They arrived with 37 positives, got it down to zero once Dabo had them under their thumb, and the reason why is because Clemson wants to win, as John hinted at, a national title. Virginia likewise has done an excellent job. They've put a great amount of testing in place, more than the once every 3 weeks sort of thing. And Oklahoma, by all accounts, is also doing it. Teams that want to excel and are looking at good seasons, they're not who I worry about. I worry about the team that goes unexpectedly 1-4 to start the year, if we get that far. Yeah, the team I point to is Miami. They beat UAB, and then they've got Clemson, Florida State, Louisville, and Pitt, all possible losses. They wind up at 1-4. Half their team's going to be on South Beach, you know, after the Pitt game. and because they're just not going to care as much anymore. And that'll be fun for Virginia to go and play in Miami the very next week. That's what I worry about long-term if we get going. I know, if. But if we get there, you are relying on everybody not just being right on day one, but right on day 50. And that's a tall order in some cases.
Well, I want to bring the focus a little bit more back to basketball here, because I think David mentioned Mark Emmert coming out and saying a little bit, say that there will be some basketball. And even Mark Emmert mentioned basketball in a bubble, and a few other sports writers have been proposing it. There's been proposals by organizers to do bubbles. Rocco, you put out on your website, bracketeer.org, a whole bubble proposal here. You know, the bubble is working in basketball. It's working in hockey. Baseball, not in a bubble, and the St. Louis Cardinals are a complete disaster. So, how about that? Is this where we're all going now?
Well, in my opinion, just based on everything we're learning, and my proposal, I appreciate you reading it, and I encourage everybody to check it out. It's more about, hey, we saw, go back to a couple months ago. We watched the TBT, right? And it started off a little shaky. A couple teams got kicked out. But once they got going, they learned, and every other team didn't have an issue. Nobody got kicked out. We saw an amazing championship game with a game-winning shot. I didn't even really pay attention to the TBT before that, but it was really all we had. And more paying attention because of the health and safety aspect, because that was a real test. Now we see the NBA. We've got four straight weeks of hundreds, 400 plus people, no negative tests. So we've learned a lot as far as controlling an environment from a health and safety standpoint. And I'm no doctor. I'm just kind of reading along as everybody else is. I don't see the way college basketball typically works with all the traveling back and forth, especially in non-conference play, to be able to play a season without a bubble. It's just, I don't think it's realistic. And I think you heard some of that from Emmert today. And my juices got flowing on that a couple months ago. And so I spent a couple of months I asked you guys quite a few questions. I pulled around, and also it was a great just geography experience, learning how close everybody is and how you can tie teams together and create a non-conference schedule. So that part of it was fun. But I really think the conversation has to start now. I'm really encouraged that it is. And you're right. Rossi Carson's a guy I met last year. I got to cover the Battleground 2K down in Houston. He runs that event. He's scheduled to run two more events this year. And now he's actually proposed a bubble, as they've just announced today, in Houston, which could be up to 50 teams, I think you said, Chad.
And he invited 50, but the idea is to have 20 teams there. So 20, he reached out to 50 schools, though.
And he said schools are actually reaching out to him. So I saw that 12 Power 5 schools reached out to him. So, I mean, that's just one man in one city. I think realistically, for the NCAA to be able to pull it off, they need buy-in from all 32 leagues. If it ends up just being a power conference thing, I think that's, in my opinion, somewhat of a tragedy, because a big reason why I love this sport is the element of all the conferences and everybody having a chance from day one. So hopefully we have enough time to prepare all that. I wanted to throw this proposal out to get some juices flowing on that. So appreciate you checking it out, and hopefully we get there.
And with David, I think we're going to do something really special if we do get some bubble play here. People know that in the past we've stuck you during championship week in the puppet bunker.
It's not going to be puppet bubble.
Well, yes, it's the puppet bubble. It's coming soon at Hoops HD. Keep an eye out for this. We have David Griggs set to go inside a bubble.
Well,
on his own.
Kind of tying this into what we were talking about a week ago. If you're going to, I said, well, let's actually enforce the 20-hour week. Well, this is going to be a 24 hours a day, 7 day a week operation for 2 months. So now definitely don't say that they're being treated like amateurs if we're putting them in a bubble. I could foresee the problem of having them in there for a month or 2 months or however long it would be with 50 other teams, because, like, I did ask a friend of mine who works for a rather large network, how much would you have to pay a television crew or a media crew to move into a bubble for 2 months? And the response was a lot. Like, you would need a lot of testing. You would need, like, other people in there, like the athletic training staff, who probably could not be made, if they did not want to move into a bubble for 2 months. That just would not be realistic for a president or an AD to say, you've got to do this or you're going to lose your job. I think the players and coaches, not all of them would like it, but they would, I think the athletic trainers would absolutely hate it. I think the administrators that had to be there with them would hate it. I think the SIDs wouldn't be too happy. I know several people that are referees. I can't think of a one that would actually consider doing this unless they were going to pay them like what the NBA refs get, which is substantially more. Most college referees do it as a supplemental income. They have other jobs. I just think that, like, when people – I get it on the surface. It's like, well, the NBA's in a bubble and the WNBA's in a bubble, so why can't we put college in a bubble? Well, because there's just a lot more to be considered. Academic freedom, a lot – you might run into a situation where a lot of professors would be like, well, I'm not going to let them be – in a purely online format.
And let me throw this out there that you can have an idea of what, well, now you're suddenly saying, well, all these athletes, they're going to be offered a bubble and taking classes online while we are requiring all the other students to be live in the classroom. And it's just, Brian, let me bring you back in here also. We haven't spoke to you for a little bit here. You know, aren't we just further saying we do not have student athletes, we have athlete students?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just further showing that they are there to do the work, and yeah, they get a scholarship. It's awesome. They get a ton of benefits from that, but there's still going to be a big there's going to be a big fallout from all of this. It's so, since we have, everything is so fluid and we don't know what's going to happen next, it's kind of like this, oh, I hadn't even thought of it that way sort of aspect. And you know, another thing I feel like to consider with a bubble is, you know, you get a lot of players that have very close friends that maybe at the university with them. And, you know, it's going to be pretty tough to get 18 to 22, 23-year-old people, especially 18 to 23-year-old men, to be in a bubble for that long. I mean, you got professional athletes is one thing. You know, they're making millions. They're older, you know, one would hope that they're, I guess, a bit more, I don't want to say mature, that seems mean. I would hope that
they're more mature.
We're talking about kids here, just out of high school. All this feeling of liberation, and all of a sudden, you're in this bubble, and you're not getting anything other than this distance education where, you know, I mean, exactly. It just feels more and more like we're separating out and we're not actually valuing the student aspect of it enough, in my opinion. And again, this is an endless argument about the whole, you know, paying of players and such. So it's tough. I'm very concerned.
Yeah, and Ty, tell you've got a team that's sitting in the bubble there at 2-15. You think the players of those teams are really going to want to sit around in the bubble, or they're not going to be sneaking out at night to go to a party? Seriously. Mm-hmm.
Depends on what's in the bubble. I hear the NBA bubble is like heaven on earth. You got like barber shop. You got like the fishing. You got the video games. You got the
exactly.
Pool.
Yeah, do you think
on campus?
Do you think schools from the Southland Conference and from the MEAC and from the SWAC and from the Big West are going to be able to have afford that type of thing?
No, I do not. But okay, I also don't think a bubble is workable in college. Like, I'm fascinated to see if this guy in Houston can get 50 or even 20 people, just because it seems like a logistical nightmare, and it'll cost a fortune to do. If you can do it, more power to him. I want to watch college basketball, but at what cost?
Dad,
well, who's paying for the meals? Like, a lot of this stuff, the testing, the meals, the idea that anybody that has anything to do with event management is stuck, it has to be in the bubble too. And
that's why we're sending you to the puppet bubble, David.
We're not doing the puppet.
Joby, what do you want to...
The one element, because I think we've pierced a lot of the concerns with the bubble to use to be ha-ha-ha funny.
Yeah.
But one thing the NBA is doing that could have impact, if it's approved by the FDA, it's not yet fully, but the NBA is testing it, it's going pretty darn well right now, is the instant test response component, the saliva test. And that could be a game changer in terms of quick response and the affordability to institutions, some of the smaller institutions. Right now, the reason why it's not fully approved is it's only 60 to 70% accurate. But given you can reduce percentages down by mere volume, because it's false positives, not negatives. And it would be, if that were to come, and it needs, you know, hey, I'm not an expert. I don't pretend to be an expert on of anything science, but if that component that's working right now at the NBA on an experimental level is able to be moved out to these schools, that could later, you know, you need to have caseloads overall down, but that could be a game changer, particularly for athletic departments on the affordability component.
Well, I really thought that, like, just that this is the perfect way to go for bubbles, is it not?
No, yes.
I mean, is everybody not safe in one of these bubbles, David? I mean, that's the way to play basketball.
that would be, I would watch that.
keep them sanitized.
It would be a really tough wide receiver catching the ball.
We're going to be playing the AC8 next year. And win that
the block, yes.
They're going to be a nightmare
to wrap those. Sorry, go ahead.
As I say, best of luck on the ball charge call.
Brian, why don't I stick with you here? I want to run through everybody for any of their final thoughts on all these various issues we had today. We've hit a lot. I think we probably do several more hours on it. But let me start with you, just on your any other final thoughts you have on this or anything else that's going on.
Just that I hope that everybody's spirits, I hope to help keep everyone's spirits high during uncertain times like this. I'm up to 261 jerseys. I actually got this one today.
Yeah.
Last thing. I went through SLO a few years ago back in 2014, so I'd love to go back. But I just hope that schools like Cal Poly will still be able to field proper D1 basketball team. And if not this winter, then someday, because I'm very, very worried. I mean, there's so many of these schools that financially are really, really, I don't want to say in peril, but it's becoming really, really worrisome. And I think the best thing everybody can try to do is do our best to stay as positive as possible. And like Joby said, hopefully we get some sort of a revolutionary technique that will advance our testing abilities that can make sure that people are safe as they play. So other than that, we just have to take this one day at a time. It's a rough time, but we're all pushing through, and it's good that you know, as sports fans, at least we've got pro sports back, so there's something to focus on.
Yeah.
Joby.
Wanted to go back to a name, image, and likeness and see if anybody can get this little trivia question. So, who will be
the border war
to name, image, and
Kansas,
likeness?
Nebraska.
Who will be the most highly reimbursed player, at least initially? He's a college football player initially. Who will it be?
Trevor Lawrence.
If you say Trevor Lawrence, you're wrong.
It was the guy from Michigan, 2014.
It'll be Jaylen Waddle, who is All-American wide receiver for the University of Alabama.
Was he the one that you had?
And it has nothing to do with his great – he is a great player. He will be a number one draft pick. But that's not the reason. He wears number 17 for the University of Alabama. And if anyone knows Alabama, knows that – every single person in the stands wears a jersey with 17 on it.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with the outstanding efforts of Mr. Waddle. It has everything to do with 17 national titles.
Yeah, five or six of them are actually real.
So it actually so it would be very interesting. And finally, on the name, image, and likeness, a shout-out to the Syracuse basketball manager who has created – the sellback of jerseys of former players to get the money with all those extra jerseys that are thrown away. This manager has now started a business called Players Trunk to allow players to sell their old jerseys. You want to get some, yeah, and that's above board right now because they're no longer students, they're no longer paying athletes.
Good.
That is, I think, is a wonderful, innovative thing that is being started up, and it's that sort of thing that I do believe, yeah, if Hughes can get, you know, his wristband sold for $100 for free throws, that's great.
All right, Mike, let me go over to you.
I'm just hoping for the best. I mean, football, I don't know if they're going to be able to pull off a spring version of college football, because it's just, there's too many logistical problems. I mean, you got the NFL draft, you know, players going to, you know, play that many games in a calendar year. It's just kind of problematic. I'm just hoping for college basketball. Just, you know, hopefully they can play in the, I'm just guessing, like for example, like the Big Ten, that what they would meet up in Indianapolis, or just have each conference have their own bubbles, or.
Well, especially because come by the middle of October, when the NBA and the NHL playoffs are all done, we're gonna be out of sports here.
Yeah,
the World Series.
But is that the idea for college basketball? Like, just to limit it to conference games, and then, like, for example, the Big Ten would meet up in Indianapolis, or.
Right now, the idea is still to play the season as scheduled. For now,
yeah. Even the non-conference games.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's been canceled or postponed yet. Well, 30. Other than the Pac-12 and the Ivy. Yeah.
Mm. Tytel, let me go over to you.
Don't think it'll happen.
Well, rather than dwell on the dismal past or the more dismal present, I'm going to try to look forward to the future. 1 week from today is the NBA draft lottery. Finally, the draft itself has been postponed until October 16th. And many people with a vested interest, one of the most vested, James Wiseman. If you don't remember him, it's because the last time he played an actual game was over 8 months ago when he had a double-double and a loss to Oregon. He's probably a lottery pick, and I wish him well. I just don't remember a single thing about him because I literally haven't seen him play in 8 months.
Rocco.
Yeah, going back to the Senator Booker, Senator Blumenthal-sponsored Bill of Rights that came out publicly this morning, you know, one thing that I found in the fine print that didn't really make all the headlines, I don't think we covered it earlier, was it also proposes to eliminate the sit-out transfer and the national letter of intent that you can get out of either one. And so I think it's interesting because I think you guys ultimately are right. They're starting with a much higher bar to negotiate off of, and maybe we'll end up in the middle somewhere. But I also, you know, that's just another advantage for the players, and you know, depending on where you stand on that, that's something we can discuss maybe in the future. But I thought that was interesting that they layered that in as well. Outside of that, yeah, please come to bracketeer.org, check out the proposal. Again, really just want to get the conversation about how this could be even feasible. If not, I thought, David Griggs, you had an amazing perspective on officials and trainers and how do we do all that. Mark Emmer today said the logistics and the healthcare problems are not insurmountable. Hard to take him at his word, but apparently there's something up his sleeve to take care of that. I guess my idea here within the proposal that I thought was logical was if we slim it down to less than 20 bubbles nationwide, and in mine it's 11, we can start to centralize a lot of those efforts. So if half the referees don't want a referee, you can have a referee ref twice a day. Or you can pool the trainers to train for different teams. They'll be playing throughout the day. Now, obviously, that's a big concern, as you guys mentioned, as far as them being students and athletes. But anyway, there are some scenarios where they can maybe start working on some things. I think sports has become so specialized over the last decade, for better or worse. I think we all agree on that. Mm-hmm. And I think these kids, you know, even coming up through AAU ball, they dedicate their lives to it. So asking them to play 2 months in a bubble in college basketball is actually not that unusual in today's day and age. So we'll see how it plays out.
I can vouch for Rocco. It is an excellent article that I recommend as well.
Yeah. We'll link it if we remember to do that
I'd love to see if this does go nuclear and we end up without a basketball season. I'd love to see the top 80 or so football schools say, okay, that's it. We are going to form our own conference, gigantic super conference, and go from there.
And then we don't bubble.
Yeah, but like, I mean, like, even, I don't know, even more so, go from 5 to 4 region, you know, sort of things. And then if you're going to be able to do bubbles, you know, say like, you know, okay, you know, here in Vegas, we've got, you know, several here that we could use. All right, so now we have, you know, the Pac-12, and then, yeah, you have a Mountain West, obviously, below them and stuff in terms of how that gets structured. But, you know, basically moving the teams around in such a way that you get this sort of really cool, new, innovative structure to the season if we end up losing. And, again, this is if we lose out on a whole year of college football and college basketball. If we don't, then I don't know if this is a big of a deal. I'm talking if this goes absolutely nuclear and we lose everything to the point where it's financial peril and it's a, like these the big 80 football schools are basically like, all right, what do we have to do this all together?
Not only do I hope it doesn't go nuclear like that, Brian, I really don't think it will. I think that one of the things is I think even if we don't have a vaccine, I think there'll be enough advancement in testing and rapid fire testing that we will, that something's happening not only in college basketball, but probably college football in the spring as well. But David, you know, Rocco proposed 11 bubbles. You are the 12th bubble. So let me finish off this.
We're not puppet mongers a bad idea. Well, one of the things that we spawned, like the We Are United movement also spawned the We Want to Play movement. I think that we need to look at that and not condescendingly either. This is important stuff. It's passionate stuff to the players and the coaches, and yes, they want to play. And I really am sad for them, just like I was in March when the NCAA tournament was canceled and the spring sports were canceled, that now the fall sports are being canceled. Because while we love basketball here, you gotta love fall sports. Cross country meets are a blast to go to. Volleyball's fun. Football, of course, is fun. And like, I hate it for all of them that it doesn't look like they're going to get a season at all. And if they do get one, it won't be the full package that we know and love. So to kind of give a shout out there, my second final thought is I'm kind of perplexed at the role college sports plays in our society. And the article that I shared on Twitter that I think, I know Chad saw it, kind of got me thinking a little bit about how when you look at college sports, I don't think anybody looks through it at it through this lens. These are kids in their late teens or early 20s that are being expected to perform at an exceptionally high level, like at a level that 99% of the population is unable to perform at. Like, these are really exceptional individuals when it comes to the talent in their sport. Everybody knows somebody that sucks at their job. Everybody works with somebody that sucks at their job. That person is in no danger, despite sucking at their job, of losing their livelihood. But these athletes, under all these pressure and having to perform at a much higher level than most of us have to in our jobs, their livelihood is threatened. Like, they could lose their scholarship. The coaches have a lot of control and influence over them. And yeah, while they are on scholarship, they aren't really paid anything beyond that. So it is sort of, I don't think it's an even trade-off. So that's the first part. And the second part, I don't understand the fandom that comes from some of these alumni, from some of these rich donors, where if a kid has a bad game, they might have the ear of the president or the AD and the coach. And this, you know, 55-year-old millionaire is in there talking about how he wants this 19-year-old off the team. I just think that there's something really, really, really messed up about that. And I don't have the answers. I love college sports. Like, I was sad to see them end. I really, really want them back. I mean, we do this show because we love college sports. How great was Snacks from, I forget the school, but the meet. It gives you moments that are amazing. And, we love watching the players and the coaches, but there's something really messed up about how the place it has in our society a little bit. So I do think that something needs to change. I don't know exactly what, as much as I think about it, but I do think about it.
Well, I think something is going to change. I think there's just too much going on now. It's going to be a very interesting next year or so, because we're going somewhere, I think, with college sports that we've never been. And I think, as we mentioned at the top of the show, it's long overdue that something changes here. I don't know how significant it will be or won't be, but the momentum is definitely there now more than I think it's ever been. But on that note, I do want to take a chance to thank everybody for joining us. We had David Griggs and Joby Fortson up here with me.
Not doing
John Titel in the center square, Rocco Miller, Bracketeer.org, and Mike Cha off to his sides, Brian Black down there on the bottom row. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again sometime, probably in early September, with our next podcast. We'll be back talking about previewing seasons in January or so, as opposed to October. But, but we will have a lot more content. Titel has got a lot more articles, as he mentioned, going up on, and interviews going up on the website as well. But thanks for joining us, everybody. And we will talk to you again real soon.